Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 267 of your Formula One.
Oh, you've messed it right
up. I've completely messed it up. That's terrible. 266 episodes. I've
jumped the start. 5 second penalty.
I've done an Oscar Piastri back in Baku. I jumped the start. I've stalled. I'm going to stack it in the wall at turn 7. We're back this weekend for the Brazilian Grand Prix. Apparently this is staying in the edit. As always, I'm joined by Jamie183. How are we doing, sir?
I'm doing well, yes. Brazil this weekend. Always a fun track to go to. I was disappointed there wasn't some absolute monsoonal rain. But it stayed dry pretty much for the most part. And we got a decent race. I'm a bit sad about the championship, but we'll get onto that later.
We certainly will. I mean, I would argue we got two decent races in the end. Yeah. Sao Paulo is normally a track that, I mean, again, this weekend just proves why Sao Paulo needs to be the Caesar Finale still in Formula One. I know there's maybe a little bit of nostalgia of our youth and that maybe some older listeners will go, actually, it should be Adelaide, sorry.
And maybe some younger viewers are like, yeah, it should be Abu Dhabi.
Younger viewers might say it should be Abu Dhabi. But Brazil is just such a good track, isn't it? The field is tightly bunched.
Yeah,
a lot can happen, a lot can change, and of course
overtaking opportunities as well.
Overtaking opportunities, it is glorious. Of course, we did an episode, I think we recorded it last Thursday morning, and there was, obviously that went out Friday afternoon, just before free practice one, so a massive thank you to everybody that listened. But there were a few little bits of information, Jamie, that came out between recording and when the episode went live. First of all, finally, Franco Colapinto confirmed for 2026 at Alpine. Not a huge surprise, but I still think it's a little bit disappointing.
I did call it in the episode, so I'll take that.
You did. Yeah, we basically said, if when maybe it does, it hasn't happened, then maybe it has not, it didn't happen. Yes, maybe.
I'm not that disappointed. I think he's done all right. I mean, there's no one. We spoke about it briefly on Thursday. I don't think there's anyone who would do that much better available to Alpine, who would go to Alpine.
Just so, hire either of the, whoever gets dropped by Red Bull, if someone gets dropped, man.
I get the feeling someone won't get dropped.
It depends how Lindblad does in the last couple of F2 rounds, doesn't it?
True, yeah. But I think Red Bull will be Verstappen, Hadjar and VCAR, but I don't even think Tsunoda will stay at all, to be honest. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it will be Lindblad and Lawson. But yeah. We'll see. I think Colapinto probably deserves it. He's been decent since his kind of disaster of the first four or five rounds. But yeah.
Has he been decent?
He has. He's been pretty level with Gasly. And then this weekend was a bit anomalous because Gasly was really good. But even Colapinto had some decent pace and, you know, was troubling a certain seven-time world champion in the race. So, yeah.
Yeah, but that's because the seven-time world champion was last and Colapinto was second to last. I don't know. I still think, again, obviously, without kind of giving too much, if this is your first news of the weekend, then we're always slightly confused. If this is the only way you get your F1 information, I still don't think Colapinto's done enough to stay on. But then you kind of think about, like, a Logan Sargeant got, what, a year and a half, Nicholas Latifi got 3 years.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Kind of thing. You kind of go, it's not completely outrageous. It is just a bit of a shame. Because, again, I still think you lob a Leo Fornaroli in there, or you lob whichever Red Bull driver gets dropped, or something like that. I'm kind of there always going, Colapinto now is a known quantity. At least give someone else a bit of a roll of the dice, in my
opinion. He's still quite
young,
though, isn't he, Franco? He must be 21.
He's still quite young, but still, I don't know. I assume that he's, obviously, we did say it was likely going to be announced here because it is the South American Grand Prix. And obviously, he is South American. He does bring a fair bit of sponsorship to the money. To the team, even. Of course, they spent a lot of money to get him out of Williams, so I think they want to see that return on investment. But so far, of course, they haven't. And he's definitely obviously cost them a lot of money as well in crash damage. but it's one of those ones where I'm there going, it just feels a bit uninspired just to keep him on for another year. It's almost a bit like, you know, when we were all like rumoured for a couple of years of would Russell go to Mercedes to replace Bottas?
Yeah.
And then it kind of took like a year or two longer than we all expected. You're kind of there going, sometimes you just want to see that bit of a roll of the dice, don't you?
But I don't think Alpine are in a position when they can do that when they're going to finish last in the championship. So
that's exactly
although arguably,
when you
that's
roll
exactly,
the dice.
Yeah,
exactly. If what you're doing isn't working, why wouldn't you change it?
Yeah, and yeah, I guess he got 0 points. But anyway, I bet the fans in the grandstands were happy. Obviously, they were very happy with their own home driver as well, Gabriel Bortoleto. And yeah, naturally, it's impossible for a Brazilian to drive an F1 car around Brazil without running a Senna tribute helmet. So we had that from Bortoleto, and also honorary Brazilian Lewis Hamilton.
Yes.
Both had these Senna helmets. Obviously, we've seen it about a million times before. So it wasn't that surprising.
And of course, obviously, the best thing about Hamilton and Bortoleto running these Senna helmets is it gave them great luck around the Grand Prix as well. Because Senna had so much good luck as well when he used to race at Sao Paulo. Last couple of ones, though. Obviously, Gulf Williams livery this weekend looked absolutely awesome. But we come to expect that from the Gulf Williams liveries. The thing that annoyed me, though, Jamie, was the amount of posts I saw on social media going, they just copied McLaren's 2021 Monaco livery. And I've never felt so old in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Painful. Painful. And the track has been resurfaced, which is quite good.
It has. It was very groovy, wasn't it, on the main straight?
Not like, you know, 80s
not dancing around,
groovy.
No.
Yeah, not like Jamie on the dance floor after a couple of tequilas or something.
Not tequilas for me, gin and tonic.
Gin and tonic? Wow, you're even older than I thought. Okay, fascinating.
Gin and tonic or a whiskey.
My God, you could have a drink with my granddad.
Oh, I'd love it. Get me involved.
Knowing Spirits, the new spin-off show with Jamie 183 and Grandad 212. Absolutely fantastic. Anyway, moving on into practice though, Jamie. It's free practice for a sprint weekend, isn't it? There's rumours that they're going to up them to an hour and 15 minutes next year because nobody is going out and really trying to take any risk whatsoever unless your name is Yuki Tsunoda.
Yeah, and that was a really odd crash, wasn't it, at turn four on the exit, because he kind of gathered the first slide.
Gathered it up and then snapped.
Countersteered too much and just went into a wall. So, yeah, Red Bull were, was it 18th and 19th? Ferrari was 17th and 20th.
I thought it was 17th and 20th for Red Bull and 18th and 19th for Ferrari in the end, to be completely honest.
Which was pretty hilarious with the one free practice session they had. I was not that confident as a Red Bull Max Verstappen fan going into qualifying, sprint qualifying rather. Yeah, I really like the sprint format at the moment in terms of one practice session because it just puts everyone on the back foot.
It does put everyone on the back foot, and I do understand why that's quite fun because it does generally spice things up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I do think an extra 15 minutes or half an hour just to... Because sometimes you end up in the ridiculous scenario, isn't it, where you just think... Well, no one's really pushing, or everybody's kind of so... It's often, isn't it, the case is generally that a V-carb will deliver better than we would normally expect them to, just because it's got a very wide setup window. Ferrari absolutely poo themselves, because they don't know how low to run the floor. Red Bull are either really good or really bad. And it kind of is always one of those weird ones, isn't it, where you kind of feel it... Rather than just spicing up the order necessarily, it just kind of screws over some teams... A bit weirdly.
Yeah, but I quite like that it hasn't
quite like that
seen...
it's Ferrari.
Well, it hasn't been that consistent which teams it's screwed over, because Ferrari they won in China. They got...
Yeah, but that was definitely an illegal car.
Definitely illegal, yeah, you're right. But I don't know, I quite like the unpredictability, because it does always kind of give drivers more to think about, because the car isn't perfect and you've got to deliver still. And yeah, I quite like that extra element of kind of risk there.
Yeah, but do you not think with an extra half hour you would kind of find a slightly better balance for an extra 15 minutes?
Possibly.
Just to give them a little bit more.
I don't see why.
Or what they should do, Jamie, is and you get a 30-minute session and then the hour session is normal, but the 30-minute session you have to put rookies in.
I don't think that would help at all.
I think it would be very... Because then you'd put
I guess it would help the teams
on
a little bit.
Exactly. You get more emphasis on testing out your rookies as well and basically just yelling at them, do not crash this car.
And give good feedback. Rookies would have to give excellent feedback, which probably means someone like Richard Vachon would get a run because he's done about 15 years.
Or Felipe Drugovich would be in there every weekend.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. That could be,
The only thing I do want Sprint to change is give us one-shot quali like it's 2003, please. That would be amazing.
Was it 05,
wasn't it? Yeah, single session, one shot, reverse championship order. If it rains, it'll be funny as.
Yeah, could work. Yeah, I think, again, because, I mean, there's talks, isn't it, that they might up quali links for next year anyway because we've got more cars on the grid. I think the sprint qualifying sessions are always a little bit weird, aren't they? I think the problem is with the sprint qualifiers is they tend to work on the short tracks, but not the longer ones, because on the, you know, a Brazil and Austria, that kind of thing, you can normally get two runs out of a tyre. I know Belgium isn't the most kind of abrasive circuit, but of course then on the other hand, it's so long that you can't get an outlap, a run, a cool lap, and set up, run, another lap, and then a cool lap again.
Exactly. So you kind of limited. You have everyone sitting in the pits waiting for the time to go down at the start, which isn't that entertaining, obviously.
Yeah. Or the worst ones is somewhere like a Cota that isn't a hugely long lap, but also still screws over the tyres as well. So you've just got nothing going on. But anyway, I mean, let's just blitz through this, shouldn't we? Colapinto, Lawson, Tsunoda, Ocon, Sainz out in Q1. I think Tsunoda, obviously, again, a little bit disappointed, especially after his mistake. Sainz couldn't get a run in. And Ocon just seems to be very odd in qualifying. But Colapinto and Lawson, I don't think, are particularly major surprises either. End of SQ2, Charles Leclerc would make a really... I think, honestly, it just looked like an anger spin, which would basically screw everybody over and save himself, doing his best Schumacher Monaco impression from all those years ago, or Rosberg as well. So that would mean that Hamilton was out, Albon, Gasly, Bortoletto and Behrman. And then SQ3, the fight actually seems to be between Lando Norris and Andrea Kimi Antonelli. But yeah, Lando Norris maintaining the momentum from Mexico. Didn't look like McLaren had as big a margin here, but he would take pole ahead of Antonelli. Piastri, not great, but not bad in P3. Ahead of Russell, Alonso, Verstappen, Stroll, Leclerc, Hadjar, and Nico Hülkenberg into the top 10 yet again in a sprint qualifying session.
He loves a sprint qualifying.
He does love a sprint qualifying, doesn't he? Two top 10s in sprints. Sprint qualifying.
He had three top 10s in sprint quali.
I believe his first one was at US a couple of weeks. It was his first Q3 appearance.
No, he had another one. He got there somewhere else because that was his second.
I thought Cota was literally his first top 10 appearance of the year.
No, it wasn't.
Okay,
I can't remember which one, but he got another SQ3 without having a Q3. So at this point in the weekend, he was on three SQ3
sprints
appearances.
Without ever.
No Q3 appearances.
Nice. Absolutely fantastic. Taking us though into the sprint race though, Jamie, it had rained overnight and that was making things... It certainly wasn't wet, was it? But it was kind of tricky on the dry. You had to keep yourself together, which some drivers did and some drivers didn't.
Yes. And I really enjoy... I don't know if you noticed this on the formation lap. Really insignificant, but I quite liked it. Was the kind of, because obviously it's really banked on the way up the hill to the grid. You had the top of the, basically the very right hand side of the track was a lot drier than the bottom part of the track.
Everybody arcing up towards the
but
wall.
But not everybody. The ones who did it first were Max Verstappen and Fernando Alonso. I thought that was very clever.
I thought Lando did it as well.
Possibly Lando did it. The first one I noticed was Max. But then you had everyone else behind. I can't remember who was behind Alonso. Was it? Stroll was copying Alonso, Hadjar was copying Max, and all kind of these younger drivers, I mean, Stroll's not young anymore, but all the drivers who are less experienced or less good than Verstappen and Alonso just suddenly realized, oh yeah, I should be up there too. And that was quite amusing to me. But,
get a bit of dry on the tyres.
Exactly. So sprint race starts, Lando Norris gets a good start, drives off, Kimi second, Oscar retains P3, doesn't he?
Yeah, he tries to do a bit of a run around the outside of Kimi at turn one, but he held on quite well.
Yes. Lewis Hamilton gets up to ninth on the start from 13th.
He got Stroll as well. It was from 11th, but yeah, he got Stroll as well at turn one.
And then turn four happens, and I feel like these two kind of rookies just end up finding each other on the track most weeks at some point. Liam Lawson and Ollie Bearman would decide to just beef, and stewards gave both of them penalties. I know it's not in the notes. But what
did
I
Lawson
my
get a
understanding,
penalty as well, did he?
Yeah, I think what happened is Behrman got a penalty for weaving on the straight and putting Lawson on the grass, which I think is fair enough. And then Lawson got a penalty for going too deep into turn four and taking out Ollie Behrman, which I also think is fair enough. But yeah, these two, I mean, maybe I'm just making it up. It feels like they're just on each other at most weekends.
I don't feel like I remember another crash between them this year.
Well, maybe it's just Lawson has a lot of contact with other cars.
I think Lawson just gets in a lot of arguments with other drivers as well.
So
Behrman got squeezed out by Bortoletto, didn't he, off the start. Kind of then gathered it up and tried to obviously defend from Lawson, gave him a big old squeeze. Lawson, of course, then I think the red mist descends is a bit too strong because I don't think he went in with any malicious intent or anything
like
that.
No, but he was.
But obviously,
he's
going to send it.
His back was up, and he was like, "You're not coming past me here," kind of thing. It was very tunnel vision, I think.
Yeah. That would obviously involve. Oh, well, Behrman went for a spin, didn't he? But they were both still right towards the rear of the field and didn't really change much for either of them. And then kind of things would calm down for a little while until suddenly out of nowhere, we get this panning shot of Lando Norris coming out of turn three, about to make his way down the Esquilo Largo. And then suddenly just the other McLaren appears in the background in the wall backwards.
Yes. Yeah. And,
welcome
as soon as we
back
cut to Oscar
2003.
Exactly. As soon as we cut to Oscar Piastri, you've got another two cars on the wall as well. And it really was. I mean, for those who haven't watched the highlights of Giancarlo Fisichella's greatest win of all time, then go watch it, 2003 Brazilian Grand Prix, because that was very similar in that I think Michael Schumacher went off first, and then about six or seven other cars crashed in sympathy.
Yep.
Given it was 2003, I recall there were definitely tractors on the track clearing up Michael Schumacher while other cars were crashing at full racing speed, which is not
most
ideal.
Most likely.
But yes, it really was similar. And basically, what Kimi Antonelli thinks happened is Norris went a bit wide on the curb on the exit of two, pulled a bit of water out of the serrated edge of the curb onto the track, and then the cars behind, or the ones who got anywhere near the curb behind, just spun out their rear wheels and were gone. To be fair, Piastri was taking the line exactly as Norris did. I think he got really unlucky with this.
Other two probably did a worse job with it, didn't they?
Hülkenberg was all over the curb on the wet-to-dry track, which was a bit apprehensive. And Colapinto was less on the curb than Hulk, but probably more than... And the yellow flags were out when Colapinto crashed, so possibly he should have been a bit more cautious.
Well, Colapinto was the only one that was already struggling, wasn't he? Because on his replay, it showed him basically locking the rears into turn one.
He was,
and was all over the show.
To quote Martin Brundle, wrestling an octopus into turn one.
Exactly.
And then, was crashing in sympathy, basically, all the way through that complex. So,
Basically just an inevitable crash at some point soon. But yeah, obviously that would mean that Oscar Piastri, immediately out of the Grand Prix, had done damage to the rear wing. Colapinto had actually probably had the biggest shunt of the three, hadn't he? Because he actually hit the
he missed the
barrier,
tire,
not the tire wall. He crashed before he even got to a tire. He crashed before track safety and the FIA believed you could crash.
Yes.
That was pretty good going. But Hülkenberg was actually able to keep going in all of this rather impressively. Even though it still looked like he had a decent whack on the rear, but everything
seemed all
right.
Oh, yeah, they changed the front
on.
Wing under red flag.
The front wing. Did they change the rear wing as well?
Yeah, his rear wing is falling off, yeah.
Fair enough. But yeah, that would obviously immediately bring out a red flag, as they normally will for like a multi-car shunt like that.
And tyre barrier damage, I think that was the main thing,
and
wasn't
it? And tyre barrier damage, yeah, because obviously Colapinto had kind of gone through the end of it as well. But bizarrely, we then did a rolling restart, which I thought was a bit of a shame.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought we'd move past this.
I thought we had as well, and I don't really get the rationale because, you know, you think back to something like Australia 2023, and the fact they did a standing restart for two laps at the end of the race, and we're not doing a standing restart for a third of the way through a sprint race.
Exactly, and a sprint race is, obviously, this is the way you bring some action to a sprint race, isn't it? Because generally a lot of the drivers will try and play it a bit safer because there's just not that many points on offer.
Exactly, and Kimi Antonelli needs to learn how to do restarts, I'll tell you that. That's my
takeaway. Just starts generally, didn't he, bless him? Every single start over the course of the entire weekend, which I'm sure we will discuss again, didn't really go that well for Kimi Antonelli. I mean, after that, though, wasn't it? Obviously, Norris again would control the restart. Not a lot really happened until the very last lap. Kimi would try and apply a bit of pressure to Norris, but ultimately nothing would come of that. Alonso held up a big train for quite a while, but again, one of those ones where the track was slightly wet, you didn't really want to come off the dry line, so it makes it easier to defend.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if someone actually tries to go for a move, they're just going to have a huge crash, maybe at turn one. Cut to Gabriel Bortoleto on the final lap, with his DRS wide open, tries to dive to the inside of Alex Albon, and has a huge crash at turn one. And when we say huge, we mean
massive.
Monster shunt.
Yeah, if for whatever reason you haven't watched the crash or the sprint race generally, this crash was insane. And like, it was quite a good example of what happens when you try and go for a dive bomb on a greasy track when offline it's really wet. So
with DRS still open.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, really, really bad crash. I've lost it on under braking about 180, 190 miles an hour. maybe more than that with a slipstream and DRS. And
it'd be about 180 odd, apparently.
Hit the wall on the left-hand side of turn one, on the inside, and then absolutely flew airborne into the barriers on the outside. Like, this was a really bad one. And I was astonished that he was, you know, just literally walking out. I think, obviously, he would have gone to the medical centre for checkups and everything, but it's one of those ones where you think they're going to be really shaken, but, you know, he seemed fine.
Safety in modern Formula One.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Alex Albon probably saw his life flash before his eyes when he was going through turn one.
You think 10 years ago, that could have been a decapitation, had he been a bit unlucky with the timing of it.
Well.
So, goes to show. I mean, obviously, because Bortoleto was completely okay, I mean, that genuinely could have been a crash even 20 years ago. Could have...
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not necessarily killed him, but could have easily broken both his... You know, that could have been a career ender. Or, you know, had he been a bit unlucky, could have been a fatality. But testament to, obviously, again, how safe modern Formula One cars are. And I think because of that, will make great optics for future promo.
Yeah, it will. The next time they do like a safety video...
I guarantee you the Brazilian Grand Prix next year in the build-up to it will show that crash. I guarantee you.
Possibly.
Will have a quick cut of Bortoleto's car with no wheels on it flying through the air.
A bit like Melbourne do with Fernando Alonso's upside-down car from 2016.
Exactly. It always happens, doesn't it? But yeah, Norris would take the victory, though, ahead of Antonelli. George Russell in third ahead of Verstappen. Charles Leclerc, Alonso, Hamilton, Gasly all in the points. There, GG's Pierre Gasly in their Alpine up in P8.
First points in Spa.
Exactly, yeah, mad, isn't it? I mean, he basically feels like we haven't seen Pierre Gasly at all throughout most of this year, just because he's been depressed. Moving on, though, into qualifying. Obviously, Red Bull had struggled a little bit during the sprint, so, of course, you know, Red Bull being Red Bull, they decided to make some major changes to the car. And it's safe to say they worked out fantastically, didn't they, Jamie?
Yes. You know what? I was actually out at a fireworks night event on Saturday night.
Yeah, so... that made me chuckle. I wasn't going to bring this up in the show, but the fact you were still messaging us all in the group chat, and then immediately, Jamie's posted on Instagram that he's outside, but he's still being antisocial.
Well, I was like, it was one of those things where I was like, I'll go on social media for like Q3, because, you know, nothing bad's going to happen in Q1. And then I check it, and Verstappen's out in Q1.
First time ever on raw pace alone, which is a statistic I hate when they say that.
Which is mental. Like, that is crazy that he's never been eliminated on pure pace, because the other times have all been when he's got engine pens and hasn't bothered.
Yeah. Or has crashed it. Or has crashed it.
Oh, is that true? Fair. Okay.
Yeah, Monaco 16, for example, he snapped in Q1. Yeah. This is, again, why I don't like this stat. It's a bit like, every race Verstappen finishes has been in the top 10 since, like, 2006. You're going, yeah, because every time he's not in the top 10, he just crashes or retires from the race.
What about, like, Lewis Hamilton did?
When was that?
This race.
I suppose he didn't crash again, did he?
he just
retired
it quits.
The car in the pit lane.
Never give up, till I rise.
Exactly,
anyway.
Yeah. I had visions of him just going through Ferradura upside down the way that car was in the race.
Yeah, it was championship over on Saturday night for me, because obviously the way the McLarens are going, you imagine one of them was going to be on pole, probably Norris, given how quick he was going all weekend.
Yeah.
And Verstappen starting 16th at best was...
16th?
Was never going to beat, realistically, Lando Norris in the race, and that's what he needs to do. He needed to beat McLaren, both of them, every race between now and the end of the season. And immediately you're like, well, unless we get a 2024 repeat, it's just not going to happen. So,
no.
Yeah, I am fully on... The train has come off the tracks. Put it that
way. Fair enough. This has been an emotional roller coaster, ladies and gents, all year. Is Jamie 183 fine? So even if the McLarens crash into each other next weekend and Max Verstappen wins, is the train still derailed, is it?
What would the points gap be then?
24.
24 points.
23?
Going into Qatar, I still think it would be really tough. If it's 24 points after Vegas, I'll start believing again.
Fair enough. But yeah, Verstappen, Ocon, Colapinto, Sonoda, and Bortoleto all out in Q1. A little bit of a caveat there, Bortoleto didn't have a car. So both Red Bulls out in Q1 for the first time since, I believe, Suzuka 2006 or something mad.
Robert Dornbos was driving back then.
He was, yeah. The rest of qualifying, though, again... It wasn't the same, but it wasn't massively different. Alonso, Hamilton, Hamilton, Stroll, and Sainz out in Q2. Hamilton is Alex Albon and Lewis Hamilton's love child, I've now decided.
Lewis Hamilton's once again, really poor all weekend.
Yeah, just really struggled again with the Ferrari. And he's never but then been again, good at they struggled in Q2 anyway. And then Leclerc doing what Leclerc does, doesn't he? Came alive out of nowhere in Q3. Norris on pole ahead of Antonelli. Leclerc would end up P3 ahead of Piastri. Hadjar in fifth. Russell on mediums in sixth, ahead of Lawson, Behrman, Gasly. And Hülkenberg into first Q3 Jamie. Wowee.
Only took him, 11 months of the year to go by. Brazil was obviously a good circuit for Hülkenberg. Got his first pole and counting. Got his first near win in 2012. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he sacked it himself, though. Moron. Well, took out Hamilton took for out his Lewis last Hamilton, win for McLaren.
So yeah. It was worth it.
Yeah. Of course it was. Anyway, moving on though into the Grand Prix, Jamie. Once again, it did rain overnight, so the circuit was less moist than yesterday. If yesterday was slightly slippery, today was mildly moist, I think, to get some alliteration in there. That sounds great, like an old link to the Barrier title. But Norris would control the start once more. Hamilton decides to make a bit of contact down into Q1. Yes, before you even ask me, Hamilton's fault. Misjudged it. I think he thought Sainz was going to be closer to Albon. Gave himself floor damage. That would basically be GG immediately. But he did decide also just to crash into Franco Colapinto later on in lap one, just to make sure that he was definitely in trouble.
Yeah, and that was a pure misjudgment from Lewis Hamilton. So
yeah,
I'm not letting him get away with that.
No,
I heard
ideal.
Fans on Twitter calling it a jink. Not a chance. Hamilton just drove into the back of him.
Yeah, Colapinto had kind of done a bit more earlier, to be honest. If you watch back Hamilton's onboard, you're more surprised that he didn't go into Colapinto earlier on up the hill and then somehow just drove into the back of him later on.
Exactly.
So yeah, bit of a weird one there.
Someone come pick up their uncle. He's done.
A bit of a shame, that one. Next year is going to be the year. Stroll then would decide that Gabriel Bortoleto is officially Rubens Barrichello.
Yeah. We just squeezed him into the wall on the entry of Bico de Pato. Have I got that corner right?
I think that's right.
And Bortoleto, all the home hero hype before the race. Crashes massively.
And the Brazilians
at the end of the
love a home driver as well.
Oh, they do. They do. Sadly, none of them, apart from Felipe Massa, can ever do anything at Interlagos.
That's unfair. Senna did. Fittipaldi did. Piquet did.
Was that all at Interlagos? I thought that was the other one. Hakkari-Pagua.
Hakkari-Pagua was years ago.
But was it? I thought it was like 70s. That was when Fittipaldi drove.
Fittipaldi then, I believe he still won in Interlagos, because I'm pretty certain the first Interlagos was in 72.
Wow, that is a long time ago.
I'm pretty certain. Let me. You keep talking. I'm going to just double check.
But he was out on lap one. So if you combine the sprint race and the GP, Bortoleto had two crashes in two laps, which is quite impressive.
Fittipaldi won two Brazilian Grand Prix, in 73 and 74 in Interlagos, and then Carlos Pache as well in 75. Be pleased to know for the Brazilians.
Yeah, three in
Piquet
a row.
Won it in 83 at Hakkari-Pagua, and then in 86, and then Senna again.
93
Interlagos.
For Senna.
91
it?
And 93.
91, sorry. Yes. And there you go. But it's been 32 years. I was going to say 20 for a second, but I forgot that would make us like 15 if 1993 was 20 years ago.
Yeah. Which it wasn't.
No, exactly. But anyway. Bortoleto's out on lap one. Safety car. I don't think Stroll got a penalty for this, did he? But he probably should have done.
Yeah, I don't get it. Again, lap one doesn't constitute the fact that Lance Stroll has the awareness stat of a goldfish.
Yeah, but he got away with it. Safety car. They started taking this kind of shortcut bit on the end, like to skip out the part of where Bortoleto's car was. And I think that probably gave Max Verstappen a puncture. But maybe I'm just theorizing.
I don't think
evidence.
It was from that. I think it was from going through the debris of Hamilton, I want to say.
Possibly. So Lewis Hamilton has the last laugh in Brazil once again.
Always. I mean, to be fair, actually, what Hamilton did there was completely recover Max Verstappen's race. Otherwise, he was going to be in huge trouble. The race did a whole video on this overnight. Obviously, basically, because of the puncture, because Verstappen started on hards, he never could use them again. And obviously then, if he had been on the hards at the start, he would have had no pace at all because nobody used the hards afterwards because they were terrible.
True, but so I still think...
It basically forced him out of a bad strategy by
possibly,
accident.
Possibly. I think
not
he could have gone...
possibly, it did.
No, I know it did,
no,
but like...
No possibly about it.
I still think it wasn't the ideal time to pit that early. I think he maybe could have gone...
Oh, no.
He could have gone 10 laps longer on the hard, overtaken some midfield drivers,
yeah,
pit
but that's
and
the
done
point.
Double medium.
Wouldn't have. They were that bad, he would have struggled to get through.
I still think he would have done. But
fair
yeah,
enough.
Regardless,
fair enough.
I think he was
well,
doing hard,
way,
medium,
the race felt differently.
Well... We're better than the race, as we know.
Okay, we'll take it. We'll take it.
There we go. Yeah, restart. We skipped over that briefly because I jumped to Max Verstappen getting a puncture. Antonelli couldn't restart all weekend for love nor money. Again, Norris leads away. Antonelli's a little bit left behind. And Oscar Piastri sees Fernando Alonso in 2012 flashing his head of going down the inside of Mark Webber. And Felipe Massa.
Yep.
And thinks, I can do that. And lo and behold, he could not.
Could he not or could he? Because well, I still think this was a hilariously stupid penalty.
I don't
understand
think it was
why they
bad.
Gave it, but I still think it's stupid.
I think it was harsh on Piastri, but I see
this
why
whole,
he got it.
I think the whole point of, he locked up, therefore he wasn't in control. He still got it stopped on the apex. Had he not locked up, he was going to be in exactly the same position. He wasn't going to not lock up and cut the corner or anything like that.
Yeah.
Antonelli squeezed him, spun himself off of Oscar's nose, and basically just Charles Leclerc was an innocent bystander.
Yeah.
And just got
Leclerc
completely
got hideously unlucky. It was interesting in the cooldown room that all the drivers on the podium were laying more blame at Antonelli than Piastri.
Yeah. Does that include Antonelli?
I don't think so. But, yeah, I can see...
Again,
on first,
it's one of those
viewing,
horrible
in...
ones, isn't it, where the rules don't... Like, just by following the rules so literally, does it really work?
No, I think in real time I was like, that's 100% a penalty for Piastri. On the replay, when Piastri's on the apex, he was squeezed. The contact really came because Antonelli turned into him when he was still alongside. But the fact that Piastri was locked up and technically out of control of his car, therefore, I can see exactly why he got a 10-second penalty.
I can understand it, like with a Verstappen in Hungary last year, where he locked up trying to get past Hamilton, doesn't he? And is nowhere near
Hamilton
the apex.
Moved under braking on him.
Well, he didn't really. but I can understand, like, if the driver on the inside misses the apex. But if you lock up but still get the car on the apex, you could surely make the argument that you were in control. I think the disappointing bit there was the fact that McLaren didn't even really seem to fight it.
No, yeah. And, yeah, to be honest, a 10-second penalty with Piastri's pace was always going to ruin the day for him, wasn't it? Because I don't think he was
that much
quicker.
It cost him a huge amount by the end of the day. It cost him P2, you would argue.
Yeah, yeah. P2 or potentially 3, but regardless, he was going to be up there. It was amusing that he came off with track position and a fewer... rivals in the race because of this, but
exactly, it all helps. Yeah. I don't think Leclerc was ever really going to be much of a rival, though, was he?
No, probably not.
Long term.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. If I was a steward, I think I'd probably do the same thing. Just. Yeah, it was one of those difficult ones, but it's another kind of, you know, ambition ahead of adhesion for Oscar Piastri. But again, he had to do it.
I don't even think it was though.
He had to do it.
I don't even think it was... It wasn't optimistic, necessarily. He got it stopped on the apex. It wasn't like he was a day late, a dollar short into turn one. He was basically fully alongside Kimi, braked slightly later, got the car stopped, and it was only then when he realised that Kimi was turning across him that he then tried to, you know, understandably try to brake more to avoid the accident. And because the thing is, obviously, if he tries to brake slightly less to make sure he doesn't lock up, there ends up being an even bigger crash. You're kind of like, based on the way the rules are, he's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't.
The one thing he maybe could have done was almost like what I think Max Verstappen would have done in this situation was probably
let off the brake
he,
and take all three of them out. Probably.
Let off the brake, get ahead of...
Which is, how dumb is that?
It's really dumb. But if he lets off the brake, mounts the curb, gets ahead of Antonelli, there's probably a crash. But if you're the car ahead at that point, I think you get away scot-free, which is really dumb. It's really
completely.
Dumb.
Completely.
But yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, again, though, it was one of those ones, it was what we like to call a typical ground effect race, wasn't it, Jamie? Of there was a fair bit going on, And to be fair, there were quite a lot of overtakes happening because Brazil is just generally a track. What I think what's great about Brazil is the fact that the straights aren't that long, but you a lot of the corners you can often follow fairly well out of, especially obviously if you've got a bit of a tyre offset as well. But I mean, eventually early on, we were just watching Max Verstappen on what was effectively a very good undercut, wasn't it? Because he basically had 8 lap fresher tyres than everybody else and hadn't lost much time through the VSC. So he was able to fight his way back through. But especially with a two-stop strategy for most drivers, it did mean that there was constantly overtakes going on, constantly kind of strategy at play. And it did mean that you pretty much always had something to be watching for.
Yeah, it was great. Because he had really variation of strategy in the midfield as well. So I think Lawson and Hülkenberg were on one stops.
Yep.
I think Hadjar pit very early. Behrmann went a bit longer. Pit a bit later, therefore was behind Hadjar, had to make his way through. There was always stuff to watch. It was great. And you had Ocon in there doing the same strategy as Verstappen. I just think, yeah, it was a top race. And it's what happens when a safety car doesn't make everyone pit at the same time. Love it.
Yep, absolutely. And it goes to show again, when a two-stop race is the way to go, generally makes the races a bit better as well, isn't it? Especially with these ground effect cars, because you can overtake.
Yeah. And you know, we've got 3 more races of DRS before it's gone forever. So...
Yeah, exactly.
Let's savor it.
let's enjoy it whilst we can. I mean, yeah, like we said, there's not a huge amount to go through, kind of, that was like hugely race defining. I think the only other big one, of course, was should Verstappen have pit right towards the end? Should he have tried to stay out there? I think he should have taken the punt.
I think I agree with you because some of the soft drivers, so I think Liam Lawson went on for lap 30. Was it like 25 on the soft at the beginning? So. If the softs can do 25 laps and not be that bad, then you'd have thought the mediums. Because he pit what lap? 7 or 8?
Hard
to medium. Yep. And then pit again around lap 40-ish, wasn't it? 35. Yeah. So you think...
You could have tried
double
it,
medium.
Couldn't
he? You could have tried it. And I don't think he'd have beaten Norris, to be honest.
No. But he could have given him a fair fight. It made me chuckle, though, because they were obviously talking after Norris had pit, before Verstappen pit. I think it was 18 laps to go, and on that lap, Lando had taken half a second out of Max. And they were like, oh, if he keeps going like this, he'll have him with plenty of time. And they're going, at the rate he's going, he'll get him with 3 laps to go. This is going to be close, and no one seems to realise. Crofty just can't do mental maths, which makes me chuckle.
Crofty just says things to hype up races.
Yeah.
But,
in this case, he accidentally underhyped it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he would have beaten Norris, personally, but...
No, but he could have given him a fight.
To be honest, I think Hannah Schmidt and the Red Bull strategists probably thought we finish second if we don't pit. If we pit for softs, we still finish second. I think they backed him to overtake both Mercs, and maybe they got that slightly wrong. But
Exactly.
I don't think Norris was ever being beaten today. And
no.
I think he was definitely holding himself back a little bit.
It was one of those weekends, wasn't it, where McLaren had everything kind of in control. They weren't a dominant car like they were in Mexico, but they still had enough to play with, didn't they, with Norris?
I think if Norris was under more pressure, he could have gone faster, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what also made us chuckle, Jamie, obviously by the end of the Grand Prix, is suddenly you realised that Liam Lawson and Isaac Hadjar had half the field right up there. It just suddenly, you were watching this battle between Max and Antonelli that came to nothing in the final 3 laps. And then as everybody starts crossing the line, it cuts to, I think, Lawson making his way down through the final sector and half the field are just in a train behind him.
Yeah, Lawson right was on one stop. End. Well, Lawson and Hülkenberg were on super old tyres for 7th and 8th.
And I think Hadjar had basically just been told to defend for him.
Have you seen they almost crashed?
The
Hadjar
they did,
him
yeah.
In turn one, the last lap, that would have been amusing because that's, what, 10 points for VCarb, which is really helpful for them.
Which is useful. Useful at this stage of the campaign. But yeah, Norris would take the victory, though. Antonelli would hang on ahead of Verstappen then in the end. But, you know, pit lane to P3, very well done. Russell, Piastri, obviously, that 10-second penalty on paper could have cost him P2. But I think he could have been in that fight, couldn't he? Behrmann, you know, just king of the midfield this weekend. You know, he was closer to Piastri than Lawson was to him, which I think is a really, really impressive result. Hadjar, like we said, just behind Hülkenberg. And Gasly again, picking up another point this weekend.
Well done, Pierre Gasly. And I do want to go on the record and say well done, Lando Norris, because for as much flack as we gave him in the first third of the season up until Canada, since then he's been driving excellently.
He's come back in these last couple of races especially and just been in control.
If you kind of divide the season, like, pre-Canada and then from Canada to Zandvoort, I think pre-Canada Piastri was way better than Norris. I think Canada to, well, I guess Austria to Zandvoort, I think they were pretty even.
Yep.
And then Zandvoort onwards, Norris has absolutely been smashing it and had Piastri at an arm's length.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we really have kind of gone back to last year, haven't we? Of Norris has just got a bit more, you know, 2-3 tenths usually in the back pocket that really make a difference when you've got a race-winning car.
Exactly. And I think the 2024 experience of the title fight in the last few rounds, even if it wasn't much of a fight last year.
Really, though, was it? Yeah.
But I think the mentality that he went into those race weekends with, or the lack of mentality, is probably really helping him this year, which obviously Piastri doesn't have that experience to pull from.
Yes.
And, you know, he's chosen a perennial second place finisher as his mentor. So.
Exactly, yeah. You can take the Mark Webber out of Formula One, but you can't take the Mark Webber mentality out of Formula One, which is a huge shame.
It is.
Driver of the day, then, Team 183. I think, obviously, you're going to say Max Verstappen, aren't you? Pit lane to podium.
You know what? I think Verstappen did drive very well. He had excellent pace. But people saying it's like one of his top five races of all time, I just don't think it is. I don't know about you.
That's staggering because you say Brazil last year was, and I would say this is a much better drive.
No, Brazil last year was unbelievable. Just the challenging conditions last year.
He got lucky with a red flag that moved him from like ninth to first. It was like Russia 21. He was nowhere all day, and then it all just falls into place for him. I honestly think this year's drive was better than last year's.
Fair enough.
He actually made the overtakes.
Fair enough. But yeah, he obviously showed excellent pace, and I would have liked to see what that Red Bull could do if it qualified properly.
Yeah. I think driver of Sunday was probably Max. Driver of the weekend, I would say, is probably Norris or Antonelli as a bit of a toss-up.
I would say Norris.
Because Antonelli, to his credit, Russell is a former race winner here, and Antonelli, a bit like Norris over Piastri, just had 2-3 tenths of a second over him.
Exactly, yeah.
He just couldn't do starts of any kind.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, Norris, champion's drive, I think, to be honest.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think to say he's got one hand on the trophy is a bit optimistic, but I think if he then outscores Piastri next weekend, he's got one hand, or not next weekend, but the next Grand Prix, then he's definitely got one hand on that trophy,
yeah, exactly.
Doesn't he?
I don't think he's going to Abu Dhabi anymore. So,
I still think there's a chance because Oscar's normally pretty good in Qatar, but we'll wait and see. Kind of depends on what happens in Vegas, doesn't it? Predictions recap, Jamie.
Exactly. We'll rush through this.
We're gonna blast through this in a race rating.
I'm on 68.
I did have a quiz for you, but I'm not sure we're gonna have time.
I'm on 68. You're on 50, so it's not looking good.
No.
But I think you might have done. I haven't actually looked. I think you did better than me though. So you said Norris sprint win, correct? Two points.
2 points.
You said Verstappen pole. He was.
Yep, I'm happy. I jinxed that one.
Norris win. So that's
two points.
Up to four. Verstappen second. So
ooh,
1 point.
I should have perhaps cheered him on more towards the end.
And Charles Leclerc third. So you might have got it right if Leclerc was still in the race. I said Verstappen would win a sprint. Nope. I said Norris would win the pole position, which he did.
Yeah,
and
2 points.
Max would win the race.
One point.
Russell second, Norris third. So four.
I gained one.
You did gain one on me. So
yay!
You're 55, I'm 72. It's almost over.
Yeah, it is. It's almost over. I reckon I can still drag it back out to Abu Dhabi by some miracle.
We will see.
It'll be wrapped up in Qatar in a couple of weeks.
Qatar sprint, just like my driver.
Yeah. Race rating?
It was good, wasn't it?
I'll go for like a seven. I think I'm going to say an 8. I think to give it a 7 is a bit unfair. It wasn't like a absolute, you know, we'll remember it 10 years from now, but it was just a very good race that keeps you engaged. There was constantly something to be looking at. And if that isn't worthy of like an 8, I think our expectations of Formula 1 are perhaps too high.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to give it an 8. Do you want a quick quiz, Jamie? Or are we going to
take
gonna
a minute? Or how's it going to
take? I can give you a minute for it if you want. Right, Jamie, originally I was going to give you a quiz of every Italian that has scored a podium in Sao Paulo. Now, sadly, when I was doing my research for that, it's only actually 5 of them, and 4 of them were repeat podium. So I thought, it's not really that fun, because then you're just trying to guess years. So, instead, there are 14 answers. You are going to name me every Italian to score a podium in Formula One anywhere since Interlagos made its debut in Formula One back in 19... I think technically the first actual Grand Prix officially in the F1 Championship was 73.
Okay.
So any Italian that's had a podium since then, you got 1 minute, your time starts now.
Antonelli, truly.
Correct, yes.
Fisichella.
Yes.
Nannini.
That's three. Four.
Gigliotti, have I made that up? Or is he super old? I think he's super old.
If he is really super old, he just sounds like you're an Italian racist stereotype.
There's 20 definitely seconds. Oh my word.
The 90s were a great time.
I can just go Ascari and that's way too old.
Yeah. 30 seconds.
I'm doing horrific with this.
There's going to be a few of these that you should get, but you
oh, might I know. Not. I know. I'm thinking Pironi. Was he Italian? He was French.
45 seconds.
Oh, my word. This is horrendous. The Ferrari driver.
The Ferrari driver.
The one who was in F1 2013's Classic
Three,
Cars.
Two,
oh, my word.
I've
messed that right
Time up. Is up. So you've got four. You've got Antonelli, Trulli, Fisichella. 14, Jamie. Antonelli, Trulli, Fisichella, and you got Nannini, you said?
I said Nannini, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting one. Gianni Morbidelli?
No.
I'm sure you should have heard of him. Nicola Larini?
No.
The most podiums of any Italian ever in Formula 1 you didn't get.
Oh, the one win guy. What's he called? John Alesi? No, he's French.
He's French! This is terrible.
He sounds Italian. He looks Italian.
He does. It's because he was Sicilian, which is half and half.
I guess.
Ricardo Patrese?
Oh, I should have got Patrese. I always think he's Argentinian for some reason.
Bizarre. Okay. Stefano Modena?
No.
Obviously, you already said Nannini. Ivan Capelli?
That was the one I was trying to get. He was on F1 2013.
I don't think he
cars.
Was the one you were trying to get, to be fair, but maybe. Andrea De Cesaris?
Yeah, I should have got him.
I thought you were thinking of Michele Alboreto.
No. I know Alboreto, but yeah.
Yeah. Teo Fabi, Bruno no Giacomelli, chance. And Vittorio Brambilla as well.
That was really difficult.
Who broke like a 9-year non-Italian podium.
I want to see if Gigliotti is a real... Is it a driver or a pastor?
Are you thinking like Gianfranco Gigliotti or something? I feel like. There's definitely someone in there. I'm going to let Jamie... Ooh, excuse
yes, I'm
me,
already... late for work.
Think about what he's done there. Thank you all, as always, so much for listening. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure you leave a like. Get yourself subscribed. We might be back this week. We might come back and do like a Vegas, like a catch-up show, something like that. Again, if something exciting happens, I'm sure we'll do an episode. But of course, otherwise, we will return to preview the Las Vegas Grand Prix.